This teaching is from City Church Coventry. You can find us online at www.citychurchcoventry.org.
I want to talk to you about fountains and cisterns, okay? Fountains and cisterns. But before you get carried away and think I've completely lost the plot, if you hadn't already thought that, I'm not going to give you a plumbing lesson, don't worry. It's about water, okay? So we're going to talk about water. And I thought that maybe I could come up with some clever joke about how I talked to you a few months ago about fire, and so, you know, I should pick up on the other great symbol that there is in the Bible, talk about water. But I didn't have any of that, I have to say. So, you know, there was absolutely no intention to see any kind of symmetry in what I'm saying now compared to before. Other than, I do want to talk to you about water from a passage in the Bible, which mentions fountains and cisterns. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so turn to Jeremiah, please, chapter 2. And I'm most interested in verse 13, but I'm going to start at 12, just to give us a little of a run in because we're picking it up midway through the chapter. "Be appalled, O heavens, at this. Be shocked. Be utterly desolate, declares the Lord. For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed out cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns that can hold no water." It's quite poignant, isn't it? Quite a striking verse, which is in there in Jeremiah 2. And I have to say, I've mulled over this verse for quite a while now. And I'd like to share with you some of the thoughts and some of the things that God has spoken to me out of it, because I believe that they're relevant for us as well. So we're going to start talking about the fountain, and then we're going to talk a little about the cisterns, try and make sense out of this passage. And I do pray that God speaks to you as he's spoken to me through it, and that's what we achieve this morning. God speaks to you. The first thing I want to draw your attention to is, and this would be obvious if we'd have gone back and read the whole chapter, is it's God that's speaking. Jeremiah, obviously, he's the mouthpiece, and he delivers the prophetic word, but this is God speaking. And so it's God who's describing himself as the fountain. Now, I don't know if you've been to the same places that I have, but if I think about fountains, then I often think of those kind of stone structures, those, you know, monument things with water spurting out of the top. I mean, I was driving in this morning, I know in the Swanswell, there in the middle of the lake, there's a fountain sort of spurting up. But obviously, in our culture, they're usually there for decoration, yeah? They're usually there to look nice. You might see them in the middle of a public square or somewhere in which people linger. It's there to look nice, to decorate the area. Or maybe it's there to make some nice noise as the water flows. But you see, the problem is that that's got nothing to do with the fountain that we're reading about here. When God describes himself as the fountain, that's not what it would have meant 3,000 or so years ago in the Middle East. In Old Testament times, a fountain was more like a spring or a well, a natural spring. And you see, springs would have been vitally important. And this is going to be hard for you to imagine with our current weather that we've been enjoying in Britain. But if you lived somewhere very hot and dry, and you couldn't rely on the rain to fall and for the rivers to be full in order to get water, one of the most basic necessities that we need in life, if you couldn't rely on rivers and rain, then springs would be very important, because that would be where you would draw your water from, this essential thing that we need for life. And we know also that water in the scripture is symbolic of life. Yeah, it's often used to symbolise life. So when God says that he is the fountain of living water, he's not saying he's the fountain of something that's one of the necessities of life. He's saying he is the fountain of life. And I really must speak to Matthew about this, because the second time he's done this, he's taken one of my verses and already told you, given it away, second time in a row. But Psalm 36 verse 9 says, For with you is the fountain of life. And he didn't know I was going to say that. So God is describing himself here as the fountain of living waters, of life itself. There's a real exaggeration here, because if you imagine, if water is symbolic of life, why would God say living water? It's an exaggeration. You know, it's to drive home the point that this is life. It's real life. It's living life. And God is the source of it. Now, you might be thinking, okay, that's fine. It's not very controversial. Got used to me being a bit controversial. That's not controversial. But, you know, we've got to build the house from the bottom up. So we'll start easy and then we'll work our way up. So we've got some common ground. But just before we move on, I want to say one more thing from this verse. It's very important that God describes himself not as a fountain, but he describes himself as the fountain. And that's completely intentional. Because he's making it very clear, he's making it very loud and clear, that he is the only source. He is the only source of the living water. He's the only source of life, true, real life. He is the only source. And he's making it clear that in that respect, he's unchallenged and he's unrivaled. And he's making it very clear to you and to I, it's written to the people of God, that if we want living water, if we want the life, that the real life that God gives, it's only available through him and from him. Okay, so let's turn to the business of these cisterns. We're all keen to know something I have to tell you about cisterns. For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and they've hewed out cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns that can hold no water. No, I'm reading from the ESV. But if you'd had a different version, it would have said a little bit different. It might have used the word tank instead of cistern. And it might have said dig instead of hewed. But the idea is the same. I mean, perhaps tank is a bit more straightforward and more relevant for us, a bit easier for us to understand. But the idea here is about storage. It's something that you have in the ground that stores water. And it's something that they're referring to here. When God speaks, he's referring to something which people are using or digging or making to store the living water. Now, I have to say, when I read that, the first thing I think is, why? You know, why are people of God digging a tank when the fountain, the source of living water, is close by? Because that's what God says, isn't it? They've abandoned the fountain and they're digging tanks and cisterns for themselves. So I think, why are they doing this? Now, it doesn't actually tell us in the passage explicitly, but we can have a go at guessing it. We can come up with a good explanation, I think. I've got three options. Firstly, perhaps the people that God is talking about, perhaps they've just had enough of him. Perhaps they're purely and simply in rebellion to him. And they're intentionally abandoning the source. They're just not interested. They've turned their backs on God. Well, that could be an explanation. But if I leave it at that, that's not going to be very relevant for you and for I. Because as long as we're not in blatant rebellion to God, there's not much more I can say which is relevant to us here. Maybe another reason, another explanation, could be that they're digging a tank to hold the water, but it's not really intentional. They don't mean to do it. They want to go to the fountain, but they don't get there for some reason. Maybe they have some kind of outside pressure and they feel compelled. They get distracted. Maybe they get caught up with the busyness of life or the cares of the world, and they want to go to the fountain, but they can't, so they take a shortcut and they have to start digging in order to get what they need. We might be getting a bit more relevant now, mightn't we? I'm sure you'd agree with me that never in our lives have we had so many labour-saving devices. Never have we been able to travel so fast or communicate so quickly as we can today. And yet we remain chronically busy and struggling so often to find time. And speed it's endemic in our culture. But, you know, speed in itself, it's not bad. It's only bad if the speed pushes out the things that are important. That's when it becomes a problem. And if that's the case, then there's only one answer. You've got to slow down. You've got to do less and make time for what's important, like accessing the fountain, coming to the source rather than digging a tank or a cistern yourself. And I'm sure you and I can to some extent identify with that. But maybe there's another explanation for why they're digging tanks and cisterns and not going to to the source, to the fountain. Maybe they've been to the fountain in the past. Maybe the people of God have been there. But perhaps they think that what they've had, what they've received, is all that there is. And as a result, they start to dig to maintain it so that it will keep them going in the future. And on one level, that's very understandable, isn't it? Because maybe the thing that they've had, this is genuine water, it's good. What they've received from God, the little bits that they've had have been good. It's been genuine living water. And I think this is probably the explanation that would give us the most relevant warning to you and to I know for me, but I suspect it's relevant for you in general as well. Because I know that we've experienced some good things of God. And I know that we've experienced God's provision. We've experienced some of his provision. We've experienced some of his healing. We've experienced some of the miracles that God can do. We've heard some of his words. We've felt some of his heart for us and for the lost. We've felt some of God's heart for this world, how he feels about the sheep who have no shepherd and are lost. We've experienced some of it. We've had some of the living water. And those things are good. They're good. I'm not for any moment trying to say that they're not good. But holding on to them and digging a well rather than going to the source, that's a problem. And it's a problem because what we see later in Jeremiah 2:13 is that it's not just wrong to dig the tank and to dig the cistern, but actually the very act of doing it is completely futile. It's completely pointless because the cisterns or the tanks that you dig, they don't hold any water. They're broken. They don't work anyway. Reminds me of when the people of Israel were in the wilderness and they were hungry and they needed food, and God sent the manna from heaven that would fall. And on the morning when the dew was there, the manna was there, and there was enough for them to eat that day. But if they tried to store it up for the next day, for some reason it went off and it went moldy and it stank. Now let me just say, I'm not suggesting for a moment that we shouldn't remind ourselves of what God has done in the past. I'm not saying that at all. It's very important in a time of crisis, or even if everything's going well, it's really important for us to remind ourselves of the goodness of God in the past and what he's done for us. But the real value in doing that is not that we live in what happened in the past, it's that when we have that attitude, when we remind ourselves, it stirs something within us and it produces an encouragement in us, which says, in the past, when I was in need and I had a situation and I needed direction, or I needed God to provide, or I needed protection, or I was sick and I needed healing, and God healed me and he provided and he answered, when we remind ourselves of those things, it drives us back into him again. So it leads us back to the source and to the fountain. It fuels your faith to go back to God, because you know he did it before and therefore he will do it again. Now that's different from what I was saying before. This is how we need to be, moment by moment, time by day by day, whatever time it is, we need to be stirring ourselves to go back to the fountain, go back to the source, not living off things which have happened before. And you know, I really believe that is the overall point of this short passage. And that's the message. If you don't remember anything, but take one thing home with you today, this morning, that's what I want you to take home, is the desire that God reveals in these verses. It's the heart of our Father that we draw on him. We draw on him and we don't sip from the water. We don't drink what's left over or the dregs that are left, but we go and we drink deeply from the fountain day by day and moment by moment. I mean, it doesn't, whatever reason there may be that holds you back, it doesn't do God any favor when we don't go to him, you know, as if he's too busy and he doesn't want to be bothered by us. It's not like that at all. We need to go back to him moment by moment, day by day, to be filled from the fountain of living water. Because you know, the fountain won't dry up. It's not going to dry up. All-powerful, eternal, unending God, the fountain, he is the fountain of life. It's not going to dry up. And you know, no matter how good it's been in the past, it can always be better. It can always be better, because there is always more of God for us to experience. There's always more of God for us to draw on. There's always more of God. However good, there's always more. There's no question about that. And that is a life of faith. Having that attitude is a life of faith. That's the life that Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham had. And they were commended for it. It's the life of faith. You know, it's got nothing to do with walking around with some kind of tank on your back so that you're topped up, so that you can use that up. It's about drawing from the source moment by moment, day by day, whenever it is required. Dare I say, continuously drawing from the fountain rather than in any kind of way trying to store up what God has done in the past. And we know that that kind of life is available. Yeah, we know, because there's the examples in Hebrews 11 that I've just mentioned to you. And we know from men and women today that this kind of life is available, because they live it. But you know, I want to say to you, this kind of life, it's not just possible. It's not just a dream. It needs to be a reality for us. It's necessary for us. Because, you know, if we want to see the church grow, if we want to mature in ourselves individually, and if we want to see the church mature and grow up to be who it needs to be, and if we want to see this city touched and transformed by the power of God, then we need to live this life. We need to practice it, constantly drawing from the source, from the fountain. Because there's no alternative. Yeah, there's no backup plan. There is no backup plan. This is all we need, but this is all there is. It's only God. A couple of months ago, I saw an interview with Bill Johnson. I was on TV, I think, and I watched it, and it was very interesting. He got interviewed, and the interviewer was asking him what was the secret. What did he think the secret was to the healings and the miraculous and the signs and wonders and the revival that he has been involved with and they have experienced in their church in California. And it was very interesting that without a moment's hesitation, he replied, and this is my paraphrase, "I put myself in a place where God has to answer, where he has to deliver, where there is no plan B." So he's not saying that he forces God. I mean, that would just be silly. We can't do that. He's not saying that. But he's saying he's totally and completely committed to seeing God move. He's not sitting on the fence, hedging his bets, weighing up the options. Which one makes a bit more sense? Well, I'll try that. If that doesn't work, then, well, I'll give God a go. He's in, you know, two hands, 2 feet, fully in, not sitting on the fence. And that's the way that we need to be. It's the way I want to be. Yeah, I mean, it's very simple in some ways, but it's the putting it into practice. You know, I want to be like that. I want to be somebody that is fully and completely committed, that says, God, you are the only option. There is no other option. And I run to you to find the things that I need. And that's what I want us to be as well. Because I want us to be a group, a community, a church of people that have that attitude. And then as we practice it, it becomes a culture. And we have a culture where God is our only option. He's our only plan. And we are wholehearted, two-handed, both feet, fully committed. I mean, I know that today some of us are leaving and moving into different areas, but wherever you're going, it doesn't matter. If you're going to a different place and a new season, we can have that attitude to draw deeply from the fountain, day by day, moment by moment, and be fully committed to it. Well, I'm hoping that then you're already committed that we need to do it, and it's something that is that we, you know, we need to just get on and do. But maybe you're starting to think, well, okay, how do we do it? How do we access? Okay, I'm convinced that drinking and drawing from the fountain is the thing that we need to do, but how do we do it? And just maybe to help us, a few things I want to say. Turn to Matthew 13, verse 45. Just 2 short verses. It's one of the parables Jesus tells. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls, who on finding one pearl of great value, he went and he sold all he had, and he bought it. I love this parable. You know, this parable tells us so much about the value and the worth of our God. But you're already convinced of that, aren't you? But you see, the thing that's important in here is that the merchant, he's a pearl merchant. He's not just any old merchant, he's a pearl merchant. So he's an expert in pearls. He knows about pearls. And he's looking for a fine pearl, maybe the finest pearl. And when he finds the finest pearl, he sells everything he has in order to gain it. Now, if you're an expert in an area, say, being a pearl merchant, if you saw the finest pearl, you'd know it was the finest pearl, wouldn't you? You'd know what you'd found, because you're an expert in that area. But I also think that you would be less likely, as an expert, to make some kind of impulsive or rash decision. You're not going to get caught up in the heat of the moment. You know, it's not like he just sees it in the shop window and impulsively thinks, I'll just buy it, you know, and really can't afford it, so gives everything away. It's not what Jesus is saying at all, is he? He's an expert. He knows what he's doing. He makes a calculated decision to buy the pearl, to give up everything to buy the pearl, because the pearl is worth it. It's completely worth it. Absolutely and totally. It's so worth it that people who know what they're doing, they give everything they have very gladly in order to get it. And that's our God. That's what God is like. That's what God has given us. He's given us something of such incredible worth and value, people in the know would sell everything in order to get it. But the reason that I wanted to tell you that parable is not just to tell you that. But it's to tell you, because I know you're convinced already of the value of the pearl. You're convinced of the value of what we have in God, of the value of the fountain and going to the source. But I just want to highlight from there, you have to give everything in order to get it. You have to sell everything. It costs you everything. Now, I know in one sense, we gave everything when we got saved, when we gave our lives to Jesus. We died to ourselves. We sold everything, whatever you want to call it, whatever the name is. That doesn't really matter. But it definitely doesn't start at that time. It's an ongoing process. And day by day, moment by moment, we need to sell everything to pay the cost, to draw on God. I mean, ultimately, it's a done deal. It's, you know, there's no comparison, because what we give up is so insignificant compared to the value of what we gain. I mean, it's so vastly superior. It's an incredible deal, which is why Jesus tells the parable. But it still costs us everything, whatever that we have. And I guess that kind of commitment and that kind of wholeheartedness in our approach to dealing with God, we've already talked about it. But I want us to be prepared. As I encourage you, I encourage myself to draw from the fountain, to drink deeply from it. It's going to cost us everything, but it's completely worth it. And I don't know why you would be held back from doing that. Maybe sometimes, you know, we're worried about what will happen if we give up everything to God. But, you know, it's okay. We can trust him. He knows what he's doing. He's God. And it's an incredible deal. Remind yourself of that parable if that comes to you. To draw from the fountain, we need to use our mouths. We need to use our mouths to ask from God. Luke 11, verse 9, this is a very well-known verse. I tell you, ask and it will be given. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened. I spent so long looking at this verse. I think of years where I was fixated on the fact that it will be given. It will be given. It will be given. There's a promise, but I always almost ignored or failed to see the fact that you have to do something in order for it to be given, and that is you have to ask. You have to ask. You have to ask. Don't think you're doing God a favor by not bothering him, by asking him. God's unlimited. You know, in some ways, he doesn't need us for anything. So it's not like we're doing him a favor when we don't ask. I mean, in fact, We take away an opportunity from God to display his glory when we don't ask. Because when we do ask and he does what we, and we get what we ask and he answers the prayer, then that brings glory to God because he's answered the prayer. So we need to ask. We need to ask, and we need to ask, and we need to ask, and we need to ask so much more. I mean, it's great. We asked God this morning, and it was great to be amongst us, you know, as we were worshipping and calling out to God. But we need to do, it's a start. We need to do more. Calling out to God. Psalm 107, verse 6, it says, "They cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he delivered them from their distress." There's a real passion here, isn't it? You know, when somebody cries, it draws attention. If somebody cries, they don't do it quietly, and you know it. And we need to cry out to the Lord. It's very vocal. It's noisy. We need to make a noise to the Lord. I mean, earlier in that psalm, verse 2 of 107, it says, "Let the redeemed of the Lord say so." You've got to say something. We've got to make a noise. We've got to use our mouths. Tell God what we want. Express the passions in our heart. I mean, I used to, way back in my, maybe you won't be shocked by this, but way back in my distant past, I used to think it was strong to keep quiet and not say things. You know, I used to think that was a sign of strength, that you didn't express what was inside your heart. You didn't talk very much about how you were feeling. You just bottled it all up. But it's not strong. Yeah, that's not the way that we should be. It's unnatural. It's unnatural for the redeemed of the Lord not to say something. And it's natural for us to talk and to call and to cry out to our Lord. To say, "God, we're in trouble. We need you. We need the living water. And you're the only one that can give it. Your word says you're the only one that can give it. Therefore, we have to cry out to you." And we say, "Lord, we're in distress. We're in distress because we need the living water. Nothing else will do. We give up our broken tanks and our broken cisterns to draw from the well, from the spring, the fountain of living water. We need you." And the Lord answered and delivered them from their distress. Yeah, I want to be in a church, in a community that has that as a culture, where we ask God, moment by moment, day by day. We're not quiet. You know, I have this great fear in my life. I don't want to be like James when he writes the readers of the book of James, when he says, "You don't have because you haven't asked." Yeah, I don't ever want to be somebody that can say, "I don't have, but you haven't asked." We need to ask and be vocal. Unashamedly and unhindered asking God. It's a good thing. It's not strong to bottle it all up. We need to be vocal. Call out to our God. I've just got one last thing. I want to talk about expectation. Expectations are a real buzzword in my job, actually, at the moment. And I spend a fair amount of time managing expectations. But usually people's expectations of the health service and their expectations of what modern healthcare can do. It's very interesting, actually. This is an aside. It's very interesting how many people think that pretty much anything can be fixed. And there is, you know, basically not much limits to what can be achieved by modern medicine. I'm often tempted to say, I don't know if you're a fan of Star Trek, but the famous line from Star Trek where Dr. McCoy says, "I'm a doctor, not a miracle worker." No, I've never said that to anybody. Well, occasionally I'm tempted. But expectations are so high. People's expectations are so high that often I have to intentionally lower them. I have to bring them down because they're going to be disappointed. But you know, we have to manage our expectations as well in the church and in our relationship with God. We have to manage our expectations. But hear me right. It's not that we need to lower our expectations. Our expectations are way too low and we need to raise them. We need to increase our expectations of what God can do. It's still managing, but it's the complete opposite. We need to expect that when we call out to God, that he will hear us and answer. We need to expect that when we lay our hands and pray for the sick, that they will be healed. We need to expect that when we come together, when we meet together and we worship and we sing and we offer our praise, adoration to God, that his presence manifests itself. We need to expect it. We need to expect that God hears us when we call that when we pray, he will answer. We need to expect that the gospel is the power of God and it can break through any barrier, however hard and seemingly impervious it may appear. The gospel can break through. Yeah, we need to raise our expectation because with God all things are possible. Yeah, and I mean, the reason that I've said those things to you there is I can find evidence in the scriptures why those things I've told you about expectation are Bible-based, why we should be expecting them. I'm not suggesting that we come up with just some kind of wild fantasy in our expectations and just create something ourselves, which, you know, frankly, God is never going to do. Not because he's not able, but because he doesn't work in that way. But when we know how God works, we know from the scriptures the things that he's going to do. We need to raise our expectation that this, you know, that things are going to be different. We need to raise our expectation that if he is the fountain of life, that the last time we came, it's not going to be like that now. It's going to be different. But when we come to God this day, there's going to be new things for him. There's going to be new wonders for him to show us and to reveal to us. There's going to be fresh water and it's going to be better than what we had before. Even though that was good, this is going to be better. And if you have that attitude, it stirs you up, doesn't it? Encourages you. Drives you. You know, when we need excitement and when we need adventure, we should go to God. Yeah, he's the most exciting and adventurous person. He's not a person, is he? But he is a person. In the universe. You know, I don't want to be somebody that goes to God just at the bottom when we have a problem and we try to fix it in our own strength. We need to go to God first and say, God, we have such an expectation of you that we're going to go to you first. I show my expectation that you are the source, but I go to you first. I go to you first. I turn to you first. I turn to you when I have a problem. I turn to you when I don't have a problem. I turn to you when I need to relax. I turn to you, you know, when I want to have a good time. You know, I'm not being flippant. I'm just encouraging us. You know, this is a lifestyle of raising our expectations and drinking deeply from the source and from the fountain, because you know, God, when we ask God for more of him, he demands more of us, and that's why it costs us everything. But you know, church, it's so worth it. Yeah? Who wouldn't give their rags for the riches that God has for us? Yeah? I know difficult things happen sometimes and we go through troubles. But the fountain doesn't run dry. The fountain never runs dry. Yeah, I think you get what I'm saying, don't you? Shall we... I'll ask Dave and the musicians if they'll come back. I know we don't have much time, but we'll maybe spend a couple of minutes just focusing afresh, drawing from the well, from the fountain.